Slowly Charlie turned back to Gregory Scott. "Your credentials, father, are they for real?" "You think I'd tell you if they weren't? Of course they're for real, Charlie. As are Father Harry's and Father Hugh's. They're biblical scholars known throughout the world, noted for their teaching and writings. Why, Father Harry's published a seminal work on the Jewish historian Josephus. Josephus, War and the Maccabees." Father Harry made self-deprecating movements. "What more can I say?" The Father Superior closed his mouth, as if he were never going to speak again. Charlie remembered what he'd read about the plot to save Jesus from death, and the pact made with Joseph of Arimathea to take the still-living body from the tomb, to be looked after by the sect living by the Dead Sea. Charlie looked at the two monks, Harry and Hugh, and they both made tiny movements, as if acknowledging his presence. He did not want to get bogged down in dense theological arguments, so he went back to the question of money flowing like a river through the island of Ringmarookie. "How did it work, Gregory? Explain the technical side of things. Money in, cleaned up, and then money out." Back to the monastic laundromat. "For a while I held them at a distance, day and night, because I couldn't see how it could be done, even though I certainly wanted it. We were getting deeper in debt every year." "How did you make ends meet?" "With great difficulty. The church had rich patrons when Father McConachie first formed the order. Nowadays it doesn't seem to figure highly in cool Britannia. We tick over with a few grants and the advances and royalties from our books, which seem to get less and less each year. Young Brother Simon says we ought to settle down and write blockbusters. He maintains that we've much more talent in here than Jackie Collins and Danielle Steele combined, with Lord Archer thrown in." Scott shook his tonsured head. "That lad'll carry many terrible sins to the grave, I fear. Simon, I mean. You were telling us how it worked, the dry-cleaning business." Patsy now applying a little pressure. "I held out. I said it couldn't be done, that it would be too complex. But they provided the other players, a tame bank manager who got a cut." "Arthur," Charlie thought. "Good old Arthur. Dear Arthur. And Colin doing the books here, disguised as a new novice master, passing off the cash as income from the hardly existent royalties of fictitious scholarly works, or the take from our many fabricated business activities. Eventually it was candy from a baby. Easy. There's no end to human creativity where hard cash is concerned. Like being sentenced to death, it is a great motivator. Concentrates the mind wonderfully." "How did you get the other monks to buy a new novice master when he hadn't served time with the order?" "Simple. I introduced Benedict as a former Dominican monk. They bought that, even when they were told what we were doing." "Told what you were doing?" Charlie's voice soared in disbelief. "You mean all your monks and brothers knew about the money going through the books?" "Of course. We're bound to one another. We're a family. We're also a kind of democracy. It wouldn't have been right to do it off my own bat." "Of course not. There would be a huge difficulty about charging 150-odd monks if the law became involved." Somewhere in the back of his head, Charlie smiled, wry and sardonic, a smile for all seasons. "Clever Father Gregory," he thought. "Father Benedict was the one who really worked the scam. Colin doing the books, as Scott had put it. Yes." Aloud, Charlie asked about the actual physical movement of money. "Real money every time," he was told. "Real cash and traveller's checks. The couriers came in all shapes and sizes, and they used every form of transport. Flew into Glasgow from Heathrow, mainly. Then dropped stuff off with Hillary, though she had no idea of why or how. Some came in with her, stayed a few days. Others came in and collected envelopes from a bank." Charlie thought of all the odd envelopes addressed to people with names like Alice, Petor, Igor, Kenny, Rudolf, Anton, Valerie. Aloud he said, "And some came by sea, Gregory, right? Most favoured method. We even had a couple of submarines last year. And an ocean-going yacht. Ah, yes, the Golden Cockatrice. Fanciful names they have, especially for a Russian." "A Russian?" "Yes, well, a Chechen, really. Not registered in Russia, of course. nor Chechnya come to that? Pause, laugh. But it's all over the place. Monte Carlo, mostly, if its owner is anything to go by.
Who is?
The owner? A fellow by the name of Chermiet, Ilyich Antonovich Chermiet.
Charlie caught the significant look passing between Bex and Patsy Wright. It sizzled like a static charge.
He comes here regularly. Once every 3 months. He's the one who takes most of the money back, so I presume he also generates it. He says he moves it physically, Switzerland and other places. Golden Cockatrice comes in. Father Benedict goes into hiding.
Why would he do that?
Oh, the man Chermiet is looking for him. Doesn't know he's here as a monk. Colin Knight. Chermiet claims that Colin has double-crossed him. Ripped him off, he says, in his rather quaint English. The last time I spoke to him, he said he would rip Colin's eyeballs out of their sockets and cut his Well, charming, eh?
Now you're spilling it all to us. I presume you have your Father Benedict under lock and key.
Gregory Scott gave them a wide smile full of guile.
Spilling it? Oh, I haven't said a word. I deny it all, and I'm afraid we seem to have lost Father Benedict this time. Could be that he's gone off with Chermiet. God have mercy on his soul.
Scott crossed himself. Inappropriately, Charlie thought. Ace, King, Queen, Jack.
The golden, whatever it is,
cockatrice. As they speak, Charlie wonders where the yacht is. He also wonders where Colin Knight has gone. Most of all, he wonders why his wife and his old buddy Patsy Wright are in cahoots, and what they're in cahoots about. The look passing between them had the shocking feel of a dangerously shared secret.
Tricky things, cockatrice is.
Charlie mutters,
mythical, half-servant and half-cock.
Colin Knight would go off at half-cock if Charlie got his hands on him.
I wonder if Chermiet's really caught up with Colin Knight.
Gregory Scott wonders aloud.
And what about old Kit Palfrey?
Charlie asks.
What about him?
The Father Superior feels lucky. After all, he's negotiated most of the shallows on this rocky run.
You said you did a favour for Kit Palfrey one time. Wondered what it was.
Charlie leaned in toward the old monk, eyes glistening with a spring-like expectancy.
Yes, Father Gregory said, looking across at Kit Palfrey, who nodded.
It seemed that he had contacts everywhere, Father Gregory, even in the 60s. He told them,
It was soon after I joined the order, arrived here on Ringmaroki in 62 or 63, Made a lot of contacts in that camp we ran together, Charles.
Scott's look was distant, as if he were on some mental time machine.
I maintained the contacts, did favours, and sometimes called them in. On this occasion, I kind of chartered a ship for Kit. He came here on a fishing boat. I saw to it that another kind of boat took him off, sort of chartered it.
No trace now, and he would not speak of it again.
I knew it wasn't treasonable.
Really?
Unconvinced, Charlie was listening to the music of what the old monk was saying. The word boat stood out, and he recognized it for what it was. A boat, not a ship, which in military terms meant a submarine. Submarines are boats, not ships. So a younger Gregory Scott was able to whip up a submarine to lift Kit Palfrey off the island.
Ceased to be real. Has it, Gregory? About as insubstantial as a bit of nookie in a monk's salad days.
Charlie did not smile as he spoke.
Quite like old times, this, said Patsy. Pity you've left us, Charlie. Pity you're not official any more.
After that they sidetracked a little, talked round the question of Hillary's airplane, asking, did she fall or was she pushed?
He had a good knowledge of engines, the Father Superior told them. Right from when I first knew him in Germany, he was always tinkering around with cars and motorcycles. Sabotage was quite within his capabilities.
And Charlie also recalled Bertie Day with greasy hands fiddling with engines.
Leave it to the experts, Patsy told them.
I'd put money on it, though. Ruptured fuel line or a little booby-trap device.
They ran practically everything, Gregory Scott said. And they wanted more, hated the fact that after they'd set it up, I had control over the bank accounts. I never thought they'd be quite that ruthless, though.
They were evil, he told them. Evil and like a couple of machines.
They're comparatively old men now.
His eyebrows lifting and falling. Senior citizens, yet they'd kill like swatting flies. No consciences, either of them. They've looped me around their little fingers for too long.
Charlie thought he saw tears glistening in the elderly monk's eyes, though it could have been a trick of the light.